Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. We got a good snow here this last week. Over this last weekend, got a foot of snow, and it just cheered everybody up immediately. You looked out at your backyard that you'd meant to clean up, and now you wouldn't have to. The things that you were going to do or thought you were going to do, you won't have to do, that probably you weren't even going to do anyway, so... And it was good. It was good, this pristine beauty of white on our brown world. And people in houses where conversation died a long time ago looked out the window, and they said, "Look, it's snowing." And the other person said, well, how much snow fell? I don't know. Hard to tell. I'm going to take a look at the forecast." And suddenly, a conversation got started, and there was a dialogue, and people spoke to each other. Summer, let me tell you, raises hopes that can never be satisfied. Raises hopes of beautiful romance, and you and she are there under the waterfall, and the water is pouring down and strumming guitars and garlands of hibiscus around your head and 39 years of bliss, and it's just not going to happen. And you wonder, who am I, and what should I do with my life? And then winter comes along, and it answers that question for you. You're a mammal. That's what you are. You're a mammal. Get warm. Get food. Find shelter. Make babies. Make children. Practice making babies. So that when you decide to have babies, then you'll know how it goes. This is winter. Winter is reality. People in my gene group are big-legged people with big piano legs and big peasant haunches and with the butts of Percheron ponies, and they're not fashionable people until it snows, and then this low center of gravity permits them to move with confidence across slippery ground and walking out on the lake out there. People with high, skinny butts, like a lot of people here, have too high a center of gravity, and you walk across slippery surfaces, and you feel like a ballet dancer until one misstep. That's all it takes, is one misstep, and you slip a little bit, and your back twists just slightly, and you feel it down in your lower back. You are entering into a world of pain. You're going to be in the hands of specialists. They're going to put you in rehab for 6 months. The health insurance is going to run out. You're going to wind up in the hands of holistic practitioners with fake certificates on their walls who are going to be massaging your chakras, and they're going to be putting hot banana leaves on your lower back. And you're not going to dance again anytime soon, whereas my people with the low center of gravity are moving from place to place with great confidence and pulling on skates and lacing them and skating figure eights, beautiful figures, out across the ice. Winter brings us to reality. But people do have to remember, in winter, you have to go outdoors. This is how you keep your sanity. Every day you have to go outdoors. Even at 40 below, you have to step outside. You stay indoors one day, and then that turns into two and turns into three, and then you start to get strange, and you start to organize your refrigerator into food groups, and you rig up a clear plastic tube through a hole in the storm window from the kitchen out to the bird feeder so you can blow birdseed out there. And you start to make scrapbooks of all of your completed crossword puzzles going back for years, and you write your family history, and before long you got 400 pages here, the Petersons and how they grew, and it's enormous, and you discover how easy it is to publish this, and pretty soon you got stacks of 1,000 books there on your kitchen table in manila envelopes, and you're trying to think of 13 people in the world who'd be interested in this. And This happens to you when you stay indoors. You call up customer service, and it's a guy in Sri Lanka, and Mr. Basagalupo, and you ask him a question about your cell phone, and you form a close personal friendship with this man, and he explains how to make a video using your cell phone, and you send him video after video of you and your family, low center of gravity people walking across ice. What does he make of that? I have no idea. No idea. It was during that bitter, hard winter of 1977 that Myrtle Anderson came up with a scheme to embezzle $200,000 from the Lake Wobegon State Bank. She was one of us. She was taught Sunday school in the Lutheran church, never married, lived in that little stucco house with the plaster gnomes and the cast iron deer. She lived there and she fed birds in her backyard, a plump woman, print dress, blue knit dress in the winter, wire rim glasses, hair in a bun. You've seen thousands of women like her. It was during those days when she was cooped up inside by that hard, hard blizzard that came down from Saskatchewan that winter, that she came up with that idea. And in March, she left a note for her sister to please feed her cats. And she put $200,000 in two big suitcases and put them in her Rambler and drove and flew off to Chicago and from there to Buenos Aires. And she bought a house in Buenos Aires, a stucco house with a red tile roof and a big walled garden with a swimming pool in a neighborhood where a lot of Midwestern women who had taught Sunday school in Lutheran churches and who, like Myrtle Anderson, had been head tellers in banks, lived there. Women who were tired of being honorable and celibate and virtuous. And they went off to Buenos Aires, and she hired a man named Ramon to clean her swimming pool for her. And then he moved in with her, and he mixed greenish drinks for her in odd-shaped glasses, and he brought them out to her where she lay on the chaise lounge in her phosphorescent aquamarine two-piece bathing suit and her sunglasses with the rhinestones in the frames. And that was her story, and that was the last we heard, 1977. The quilters at the Lutheran church were together on Tuesday and making quilts furiously for Christmas gifts, and there were rumors on Tuesday night that Myrtle Anderson wanted to come back to Lake Wobegon. The statute of limitations had run out. Insurance had covered the losses to the Lake Wobegon State Bank. The depositors had been reimbursed and made good, and she wanted to come back. 92 years old and feeling ill. That's what people heard. She had written to her brother Bob, who has lived in Lake Wobegon all these years, and told him that she wanted to return. Well, that was kind of shocking news. The first rumor was that she wanted to buy that old abandoned mansion, which is up on the top of the hill there, up behind the high school, that used to belong to Wally Bunsen when he came back from the Chicago Cubs in 1928. And he built that beautiful big house, which he lived in for a year until he lost all his money in the crash. And then he had to go barnstorming on barnstorm baseball teams around the country. And 2 years after that, he was struck in the head by a foul tip off his own bat, and he fell down dead. It became rental housing for a number of years, and then it just fell apart, and then it was abandoned because it was full of bed bugs, and it's been boarded up ever since. And the rumor was that Myrtle Anderson was going to fix it up and live up there in grandeur up on top of the hill. Well, Irene Bunsen was not happy about that. Not happy. You can't just walk off scot-free and then come back and expect us to welcome you as if nothing had happened. I mean, I don't care for John Dillinger to live in a big mansion up at the top of the hill, and we'd have to go up and sing Christmas carols to him every year. Her sister Arlene said, but Myrtle has done a lot of good. She's sent money anonymously to the Lutheran Church so the youth can go off to Bible camp in the summer. And she made an orphanage down there in Buenos Aires. She just wants to be buried here. Well, I don't care, said Irene. You can't expect us to put on a big fancy funeral for you if you've stolen money from people. I mean, standards are standards. Well, you know, if you belong to the Christian church, that forgiveness is going to win out in the end. I mean, that's a losing argument. So you know you're going to lose that one. It's all perfectly clear. The story of the prodigal son is there for everybody to see. But they were not happy about this rumor at all. And then a couple of weeks ago, the gospel text Sunday morning at the Lutheran church was the verse in which Jesus is visiting the Pharisee, and the woman who had sinned came in and was so moved to see him that she wept and her tears fell on Jesus' feet, and she dried them with her hair, and then she anointed them with expensive ointment from a jar. And the Pharisee said, well, if you're a prophet, surely you can see that this woman is a terrible sinner. And Jesus said that the greater the debt that is forgiven, the greater will the love of that debtor be for the one who forgave her, which is a verse we're nervous about in the Lutheran church, since it seems to suggest that the Lord loves the big sinners more than the little sinners. Bad news for us, assuming we are of the little sinners. But it was a verse that moved Bob Anderson, Myrtle's brother, who stood up during the announcements after the sermon, and everybody expected he was going to talk about volunteers needed for the fall cleanup and to put up Christmas wreaths for Advent. But instead, he stood up there and he said that this verse had deeply moved him. He said he had thought for 33 years on the subject of forgiveness, and then he couldn't say anymore. His shoulders were shaking, and he was weeping. He tried to bring himself under control, and he said, I just feel. And then he couldn't say anymore. He stood up there, his whole body trembling, and people sat and looked at him, and nobody could do anything to help him. He just stood up in their midst and cried all those years worth of tears, and then he walked away. We don't go for conflict in our town. Some is inevitable, but we don't welcome it. We believe that you should not think you're different from other people. Don't give yourself airs. Stay with the other. Stick with the plan. The Christmas lights are up, but it's a rule in town that you don't turn them on until evening of Thanksgiving Day. And this rule is pretty much observed in this town. People don't step out in front of other people. It's not considered nice. When I was young, of course, I rebelled against this and considered this to be conformity. But it's a sort of cohesion. It's a kind of unspoken cohesion. It's a fabric that ties this town together, along with the lutefisk dinner, which will come up this next week in the Lutheran church on Wednesday. There will be 5 sittings starting at 11:30 in the morning. Reservations are required, believe it or not. The basement will be packed with people for a dinner that consists of lutefisk, meatballs, rutabaga, red cabbage, red potatoes, lefse, and weak coffee. Lutefisk, this fish, dried cod that's reconstituted, still smells of lye. The church will reek of lutefisk for the next 2 weeks. But this is our delicacy. This is what sets us apart from other people, because we eat food that other people consider repugnant. This holds us together. Let the strangers eat the meatballs. We will eat the lutefisk. Lutefisk and coffee and big butts and winter. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.